All right. We can do this. We got one more.
Oh, man.
We can do this.
Look at us.
Look at us. Killing it.
Like a crudely oiled machine. We're getting caught up. I mean,
it's almost like we're doing our job.
We totally had to skip a year.
What year?
2014. Actually,
who even cares about 2014?
If Twitter's to be trusted, nobody liked 2014.
I mean, so it's March. It's March of 2015, and this is the Shipwreck Podcast, and I'm Amy. You might know me as the host.
I'm Casey, and I'm the guy that shows up at the end to talk about things. But on this podcast, I'm here.
Hooray!
We're the producers of a show called Shipwreck. You're going to hear a third voice that is not us, and that voice belongs to Baruch Porras Hernandez, our thespian in residence. He will be reading each of the stories today. But how do we get those stories?
Well, you know, once a month we pick a book, usually one that either we love or that other people love. This month it's one that I love. I think it's one that you love, too.
I love it, too.
And we invite six writers and ask them to help us lampoon it. We assign each of them a character and ask them to write erotic fan fiction loosely based on or heavily featuring that character. And then we read them anonymously, and the crowd votes for their favorite on the first Thursday of every month at Booksmith.
So just if you're in San Francisco, check us out first Thursday. We also show up from time to time in New York, or maybe your town if you let us know.
Shipwreck San Francisco, all spelled out, at gmail.com. Let us know. So you know Dorian Gray, a picture of Dorian Gray, and you love it. It's about the dangers of beauty and pleasure without substance, and some painting in an attic that shows all the sins that a human can reasonably commit in a lifetime.
It's mostly Oscar Wilde being adorable for a while.
Being adorable and fainting a lot.
Everybody has a sofa. Like, every room, you can't walk through a door without a sofa to fall on.
And, like, they're all just doing beautiful things. Like, in every scene, someone's, like, smelling flowers or, like, admiring something beautiful or,
I was lying on the fainting couch today, smelling flowers while my portrait was painted.
It's pretty much like that. It's great. It was written by Oscar Wilde, and he's Irish, so we decided to do this for March. He was an Irish playwright and poet who was imprisoned for gross indecency, a.k.a. being gay, and he died at the age of 46 of meningitis. I don't know why I'm giving you a book report, but I'm just really glad that we live in this world where we get to put on, like, super gross, like, queer shit like this. And I will tell you that during the live show, someone tweeted at us that they thought that if someone drew a pentagram on the floor and, like, put some glitter in it, that Oscar Wilde himself would have appeared. And, you know, I think that's right. I think we would have just, like, we could have all, like, held hands and lit some candles, and he would have shown up and just been really pleased that this is the world that exists now.
Yes. It was worth it. It was worth it, he would have said to himself when he arrived here.
Yeah.
Our first character was Basil Hallward.
Basil Hallward is the guy who paints the painting of the other guy.
You know, the one with the face.
the painter guy.
The windows of the handsome library stood open. The odor of the rose garden lazily drifted through the long lace curtains and danced around the beautiful man seated in a velvet wingback chair. Beside the man was a marble side table with gold gilt legs, an ivory ashtray with emerald enamel scales, and an IKEA ultra suede storage ottoman. Each wall was painted in a warm eggshell that stretched to the elegant cornice boards where hand-carved Greek figures did weird sex things to each other. But the greatest architecture of the room was the man's delicate face, dusted with the beauty of eternal youth, as he worked on an 8-piece puzzle of a moo-moo cow. A butler entered carrying a silver tray. We ran out of ice, Master Dorian, so I chilled some diamonds. He placed the drink tray beside Dorian. Lord Henry is here to see you, sir. He says it is urgent. Oh, do send him in, Dorian said, jumping up with the glee of a terrier. Lord Henry entered wearing a velvet cloak. Oh, Lord Henry, I am so glad you're here. I have been reading and making things, and then I drew you a cat. Lord Henry told Dorian to sit and gave him a biscuit. Dorian, I have horrible news. Your beloved fiance has gruesomely killed herself. Ew, Dorian said. Oh boy, you mustn't blame yourself. Women are so unhelpable and what with their big eyes and tiny wrists. You can't find happiness with them. The only way to a happy marriage is ignoring the wife and sleeping with lots of men. It was never possible, Dorian, but I am sorry. I can't believe that monster would do this to you, Henry Brown. I know, killing herself could have, like, injured my reputation. But her tormented by me soul has passed. Wouldn't the greater crime be to think about it? Conan put a cold diamond in his glass and took a tiny birdie sip. My dear boy, you've learned something from me yet. You allow yourself to live undaunted, which is the only virtue. You are beautiful. That is more important than being good. Beauty is a thing one possesses without ever lifting a finger, like money. A butler came in with a dish of sandwiches. The men made happy little claps. Thank you, person. My pleasure, sir. Lord Basil Hallward is here. Oh, send him in, Dorian said. The butler bowed and left. The working class are adorable, Dorian said. And they have such exquisite hides, Lord Henry added. Henry swallowed his sandwiches without chewing, while Dorian nibbled like a fancy boy. Basil entered wearing a Parisian fox fur coat, suede loafers by Alfred Lord Benson, and a minuscule hat. He was carrying an artist's case. Hello, Basil, Lord Henry said with a pompous sneer. Oh, Henry, it's almost dark. Who's manning your alleyway? Basil said bitterly. Your judgment is praise, Lord Henry said. Morality is poison in a silver cup. Only the drunks have truly lived. Ah, well, you're living the most then. You've been drunk the 4 years I've known you. I am in a fraternity, Basil. Lord Henry spat back. It's tradition. Dorian waved his gorgeous hand and spoke. Hey, okay, bringing it back to me, Basil. What would you like to do today? We could play with my brooches. You could brush my hair and feed me oats. Basil shook his head, remembering his purpose. Dorian, I came to inquire about your state. I heard the horrifying news of Sybil's death. I thought you'd need to be consoled. Who? What? Dorian asked, looking confused and fucking adorable. Oh, right, the selfish girl. This morning I was devastated and threw myself onto 3 different sofas. I don't think anyone's life has been harder than my life, Dorian explained, stamping his cute little feet. But I had a juice box and a nappy nap, and you'll see now I am quite repaired. I may be able to forgive her, Dorian said, bravely. Basil nodded and began getting up his easel. That's good news, Basil said. I would never hope her fate on a person, but I must admit that I was worried of losing you. He began drawing a rough sketch of Lord Henry. Oh, Basil, I'm surrounded by obvious clues, but I can't understand what that might mean, Dorian said, making Henry snicker. Basil had now sketched Henry's face in full.
Dorian, he clearly wants to
Basil erased the drawing's mouth, and Henry's voice disappeared. Henry grasped at his throat, astonished. Dorian, your smoking jacket has so many sparkles. Wouldn't it look lovely out in the sunlight? Basil said.
It would!
Dorian rose and skipped out to the yard. Basil drew a thin mouth back on the drawing, and Lord Henry could speak.
What is this witchcraft? He demanded.
There's heaven and hell in all of us, Lord Henry, Basil said with a sneer.
But how could you?
Henry began. Shh. It's never explained in the book.
But what about the boy, Henry asked.
Dorian was completely distracted, trying out his hair in each type of sunlight. I'm done mixing his primaries, Basil said, juggling his pencil and looking at Henry thirstily. I want something with a darker pigment. A chill climbed up Henry's shoulders. Henry, may I poke around in your brush box? Henry gulped, then smiled, and said with toxic virtue, paint me like one of your French boys! Basil smiled and opened his paints. He brushed a beige streak across the sketch, stripping Henry of his clothes. With each layer of added pigment, Henry felt his pulse quicker, his senses enhanced. He was paralyzed by the pleasure of long brush strokes massaging his every nerve ending. Basil erased the drawing's floor, making Henry's body hang in mid-air, spinning slowly. Each touch of Basil's brush tip rippled pleasure through Henry. Basil added cool and warm tones, fizzy pastels and heavy oils. Each possessed Henry with a new wave. Rhythmic moans began to escape Henry, rolling in time with the constant brushing. Soon, Basil was moaning too. It became grunting. Then leapt through Henry in shouts, deeper! Give it to me, deeper! Basil brushed into the canvas with increasing pleasure, sure the brush would snap at any moment. Then realizing his palette was empty. He was out of paint. But Henry, strokes away from orgasm, they locked eyes filled with hunger. Henry spread his legs and snarled, make me Mona Lisa smile! Basil stabbed the brush handle right into the painting's welcoming coin purse. Sir Henry's mouth jumped into an O. As Basil pushed the brush deeper, Henry was suspended in ultimate dominating pregasm pleasure. When he could take no more, Basil pulled the brush out and shook it all over the painting. The man's grim moans filled the room. Then silence. Henry crashed to the Persian rug, panting softly. He rolled over and flashed Basil a gentle smile. His stomach was covered in white paint.
And that was returning champ, two-time winner, dark horse candidate from Atlas Shrugged, Joe Wadlington, with the first salvo into the picture of Dorian Gray, Basil Hallward.
So our next character is the actual picture, the picture of Dorian Gray, the aforementioned picture of a boy named Dorian Gray. It spends the majority of its life hidden in an attic, and It spends the majority of its life hidden in an attic, suffering the effects of Dorian the person's lifestyle of complete debauchery. And yeah, you get the idea. The picture is what's behind Dorian's beauty, etc. You get the picture.
The picture stood on the bridge. That kind of Japanese-looking one with the shitty water lilies. Just clumps of white and green pigment, really. You've seen it. He liked to go there and stare at his reflection, smudgy and ill-defined amongst the shitty water lilies. The picture had gotten used to living a life of someone else's syphilis. The way you get used to anything, really. Dorian Gray went to a party, the picture woke up with a strange rash. Dorian took a lover, it burned when the picture peed. Dorian killed a prostitute, the picture's face was creased with guilt until it looked like a damn catcher's mitt. It wasn't a good life, but it was a masterfully rendered one. Every brushstroke of his being a tiny smear of genius. How delicately the shadows had danced across the pits of his cold sores. How playfully the sunlight had kissed each fleshy, nubbly genital void. But all of that was gone now. Dorian Gray was dead, and the picture restored, made whole and beautiful again, except for his new shame, his terrible secret, which he hid beneath layers and layers of creepy Victorian garments. Cravats and waistcoats, or doublets, or whatever. Probably some velvet in there. Lots of buttons. All of this he pondered, wistfully, imagining that his featureless reflection was still that of a dehydrated sex criminal. But then, across the shitty pond, he spied such a stunning figure as he had never beheld. A pure distillation of form and motion and boobs. How enchanting she was! How mysterious and dreamlike! His heart quickened as she approached, and he pulled his vest, or jerkin, or whatever, shut. My lady, he said to her, how you enchant me. How each delicate fiber of my nature quivers to look at you. I'm a cubist nude, she growled. All throaty and Kim Cattrall-like. I've got boobs in places you've never dreamed. The picture flushed at her boldness. Beside the cubist nude stood the waist-high outline of a cock and ball someone had drawn on the door of a bathroom stall. It had been given two little jelly bean feet and a pair of tiny wings. We're going to a sex party at the Christmas cottage, the cock and ball said in its helium voice. You should come! It talked through its pee hole, in case you're wondering. Everyone will be there, added the cutest noob. Tom of Finland, the Sabine women, Whistler's brother. More like Whistler's milk, said the cock and balls. Am I right? The picture guessed that the cock and balls wanted to high-five just then, but couldn't on account of not having arms. Are you coming? Asked the nude. I can't, said the picture. I have a... But he couldn't bring himself to say it.
Suit yourself,
said the picture. She said with a shrug. She turned and walked from the bridge. Though the positioning of her ass made it hard to tell if she was facing him or not. How the picture wanted to follow her. How he longed to go where she was going. To debase himself in the kind of debauched wantonness and depravity he had always paid the price for, but never experienced. After a moment's hesitation, he ran after her. Fair lady, he called out. Wait for me! I want to go to your sex party! Soon they were in a winter landscape, drifts of snow amassing on the pine trees and the cobbled path. Most of that is cocaine, said the cobbled. People don't realize Thomas Kincaid had a massive blow habit. The cock and ball snorted a passing flurry right up his pee hole. The cottage was small and warm-looking from the outside, with a merry wisp of chimney smoke drifting up into the sky. But inside it was an Escher-esque collection of hidden alcoves and dark corners. Figures of all schools and movements romped and cavorted, their naked bodies greased with sweat. A Paleolithic cave hunter had his way with an illustration from the Kama Sutra. The blue boy plucked the suggestive orchid. A quartet of Marilyn Monroe's shoved soup cans in places that would make Roman pottery blush. While somewhere in the shadows, the silhouetted heads of state from several currencies took turns with the screen's mouth. The cubist nude reclined on a couch and motioned for the picture to join her. Hesitantly, he sat.
Why don't you take off your overcoat, she said.
The picture fumbled with his lapels. He was about to get up and leave when she pulled the coat off for him. They both stared at the ragged gash running the length of his sternum. I was stabbed, he said quietly. That's my stab hole. Oddly articulated arms enfolded him.
Just relax, she said.
She ran her weird, puffy fingers across the shreds of his canvas. Let it happen. It hurt at first, but the pain faded into a throbbing ache of pleasure. She was teasing him, pulling the stab hole open, peeling back the flaps until he almost couldn't stand it, then letting them fall shut. The whole room could see his secret shame. But at that moment, he didn't care. He lay back against her, his head between her breasts, a third breast kind of slapping against the top of his head. Onlookers gathered. She wrapped her leg around his waist and unbuttoned his trousers with a foot that was maybe also a hand. The picture's manhood sprang out. Hard and almost inhumanly impressive on account of having been painted by a pervy old closet face. The cubist nude moaned, and the picture slid itself into the silky moistness of the back of her knee. Because it turns out, that's where her vagina was. He closed his eyes and let himself be explored. Exposed. Hands groped at him more than he could count. And an army of tongues licked their way across his flesh. Someone put a finger in his butt. When the picture opened his eyes again, George Washington was sucking his nuts. And the cock and balls was perched on his chest. It slid his basketball-sized head into a stab hole. The picture groaned with ecstatic agony. He could feel the stab hole stretching, opening up for love and acceptance and also a giant cock. But mostly the love and acceptance. The cock and ball slid deeper, deeper, until the picture couldn't take it anymore. He erupted in an oily, multicolored gush. It spilled across his chest and the nude and the couch, and the cock and balls withdrew and shot its load all over the picture's face. The three of them collapsed into each other. Happy, safe, and accepted.
And that was the erotic fan fiction of the physical picture of Dorian Gray, the titular picture of Dorian Gray. It was amazing, and I would love to tell you who wrote it. That writer, however, has chosen to remain anonymous, so you can send your fan mail to us, #ShipwreckSF, and we will enjoy it, and we will grow younger. As you grow older.
We will grow younger, reading your praise.
So this brings us to the halfway point, where we would normally have a halfway point on the show. We would do three characters and then another three. In this case, we had a technical problem with the third character reading before the break. So you're not going to hear that, but you are going to hear us talk very briefly about our headquarters here in the Upper Haight. The Booksmith.
Yeah, the Booksmith, believe it or not, we've been here for 38 years. Isn't that crazy? This bookstore has been here forever.
And it has been here as long as I've been alive.
And this bookstore is kind enough to let us throw a really disgusting party on the first Thursday of every month. And, you know, the show, you gotta see it live.
The best way to experience it live is to get your tickets early, because we only hold about 80 seats. And then after that, you're in standing room only. And standing room only is standing room only. Highly recommend you get your seats as early as possible. We announce these shows as quickly as we get them booked.
And usually seats sell out 2 months in advance, just for future reference, which I cannot believe is a thing that's real, but it is a thing that's real.
This is where we are.
So Dorian Gray is our next guy, the aforementioned twink. He is a beautiful boy at the start of the novel, and it's really creepy because they keep calling him a boy. But it turns out that
he behaves like a boy. I mean, it's
yeah.
not...
Well, unfair. I was just going to say, it turns out that like being a beautiful boy is just about all he's got going on.
Dorian Gray sprawled upon a fainting couch in his chambers, entranced by a well-worn copy of the Yellow Book, his fingers unconsciously tracing circles around the crotch of his trousers. Having woken up too late to be useful, but too early to be social, he had held himself away for hours, rereading of his muse. A faint creak altered him that his door had opened, and the dour face of his servant appeared, like his conscience, unwelcome. Lord Henry pays a visit, sir, said the man. How unexpected, Dorian thought, petulant at the loss of his stuttery. Descending to the parlor, he found Lord Henry, Wotton smoking a gold-tipped cigarette held in an upraised but idle hand. Hello, Harry, Dorian said. My apologies, have you waited long?
Oh, I've been here some time, but I've amused myself. I have a gift for you. Your indiscretions recently have surpassed even my own, and it calls for a trophy. Oh, Harry, surely you shouldn't have. Besides, you've seen my collection. You know my tastes are very singular. Ah, but this is different, said Henry with a flourish, and then he unrolled a long tapestry. Dorian was enraptured at once. A delicate, woven scene of Bedouin pleasures. Orgiastic clusters of men, women, and eunuchs performing perplexing acts of fornication and clustered contortions of carnal delight. His breath caught in his throat. This is truly unique. I thought you might fancy it. It's so finely wrought, yet so tastelessly salacious. I've never seen such deep blues and midnight blacks. Harry, you are the best of fellows, but such a contrarian, Dorian said, to call that black and blue when it's so clearly gold and white. Still, I must thank you. You didn't thank me. Excessive gratitude always betrays an abundance of tact and good behavior. I know how a gentleman misbehaves, and I can see you are a perfect gentleman. Dorian did not hear this. Driven to distraction by the graphic patterns, his loins stirred. This is a wonderful gift, but I'm afraid I feel unwell today. I should retire. But you may stay as long as you wish. Harry stamped out a cigarette. No, I ought to visit Gwendolyn before tonight's performance. I'll see you at the opera in my sister's box. They made their plans and parted. Lord Henry leaving and Dorian commanding his servant to bring the gift to his private collection. Dismissing the man, Dorian wasted no time. Consumed by the spirit of the book he wished to emulate, he leaned close to the silk threads to study it closer. Satyrs dancing about drunkenly, naked virgins, men and women in myriad of combinations, lost in the throes of passion. This was a truly transcendent display of perversion. He frantically shed his fine clothes, his pristine young cock springing from his trousers, eyes flicking from scene to scene as he examined each figure, tugging at himself until he was sore of palm. He thought back on Sybil, the first disappointing lines of her faithful performance echoing in his head. Good pilgrim, you do wrong your hand too much. Indeed.
Her tragedy marked the beginning of his descent and brought the painting to the forefront of his mind, along with a wicked idea. Plundering his collection, he grabbed fistfuls of precious stones, gathered his exotic woodwinds, rolled up the tapestry, and ran them up to the schoolroom. Nearly breaking down the door in excitement, he dumped the tapestry into the middle of the dusty room and tore the covering from the painting. The weathered image glowered at him, and he exulted in it. Dorian bent down on all fours and reached for a black lacquered bamboo flute from distant Japan. Taking it into his mouth first to wet it, he then inserted the flute deep into his eager asshole with his hands, and then began to stroke himself once more. Satisfying, but he was unable to manipulate himself and the instrument fast enough. Tossing the flute aside, he balanced on the small of his back, legs spread as he reached for his next toy. He started with a pillow cup ruby, placing it between his boy-like cheeks, and with a gentle push of his forefinger, he inserted it up his ass. Followed by a sapphire, a lapis, and three strings of pearls. With two fingers deep inside, he then used his anus to remove his rings. The heavy, queasy feeling of fullness began to overwhelm. His tender rectum stretched to accommodate the fortune within his bowels. Lastly was a rare Russian Fabergé egg. The insertion of which was as delicate as to almost be as artful as the object itself. With this, he began to stroke away with manic intensity. He gripped at the length of his cock and pounded, growing closer to climax, but never reaching it. Such frustration! Thorin knew that pleasure was a passion of the flesh, but ecstasy a passion of the mind. His tremulous fingers grasped the mirror that he always kept near the painting. Holding it level, he alternated his gaze between the painting and the mirror. He felt thrust back and forth between two bodies, the scarlet pout, then the waxen lips, his smooth, unmarred brow, then the crinkled forehead, his spun gold locks and the wispy graying hair. The agony of the painting and the ecstasy of the mirror, of his body and soul wrenching him as he was wrenching himself ever faster, locking eyes with himself in the mirror, yanking up and down, and... Oh, yes! Oh, Dorian! Dorian cried. Firing a torrent of Dorian semen. Screaming across the woven scene, spilling on the floor, splashing on the painting itself. As it landed on the chin of his image, he could almost feel its warmth, taste the salt tang of his own tongue. Sputtering into a stop, he felt all the tension let out of him at once, jewels and pearls falling from his thrumping ass and scattering everywhere. He slipped to the ground, licking his lips and thinking he knew what Narcissus truly drowned in. Stunned by the sensations he had unleashed on himself, he lay still, delaying the pleasure of what was next to come. At last, he gazed up at the portrait. It had changed again. The soul of Dorian Gray was laid bare before the man himself, the ravaged figure still a map of his sins, but cast in a different light. Now the buttons of his coat were undone, his tie unslung, his trousers greasy and stained with telltale crust. The sinister gleam in his eye and cruel hook of his mouth had transformed into a vile leer, leaning towards the viewer with an eager thirst. Its poise was less cruel and more lecherous, penetrating. And its hands, the bloodstains were replaced with a pearly white substance. Copious strands dripping from his fingers. He grinned and looked at the mirror again, admiring his spare face and exulting in the evidence of his perversion dripping off the canvas. To Dorian, still naked and wallowing in his own ejaculate, body throbbing with self-abuse, it was this transformation that was the height of art and pleasure. He knew for the rest of the day, he'd be quite useless.
And that was Dorian Gray as written by Matthew Varis.
Fun fact, I went to high school with him. That is weird.
Dorian
I went
Gray to or Matthew Varis?
Matthew Varis. 3,000 miles from here, and yet...
You've traveled.
I've traveled.
You're a traveling lady.
I get around.
Military wife.
I lived in Alaska that one time. That was weird.
Look at you. It's still so young.
I know.
There's yet a world ahead of you.
I'm just like Dorian Gray.
If only I could be this pretty forever.
Let's just talk about youth. All right, so Lord Henry is the next creepo. He's like...
No, the only character that's not a total creep is Sybil Vane. That's it.
It's true. So Lord Henry is, I said this during the show, and like several people immediately tweeted at me that they thought it was perfect. But basically, he's like a cross between Fraser Crane and Hedonism Bot from Futurama. He's decadent. He's capricious. He thinks that beauty and pleasure are like the only thing in life worth pursuing. And here's a good example. When his friend Basil, they're best friends, when Basil disappears, Lord Henry muses that Basil is too dull to have been murdered.
For a long time now, longer in fact than he cared to remember, Dorian Gray had had the feeling that there was a cock in his mouth. It wasn't always there. It came and went and came. But sooner or later, at the club or the opera, or at the squalid little tavern he frequented, hoping to meet hot singles in his area, the phantom phallus would enter him once more. It would appear at the queerest of times, haunting him, tickling his tonsils until his tongue was spasming in ecstasy. And then some tiresome society lady would shoot him a glance, and he would fake his fifth coughing fit of the night until Casper the friendly glance was finally gone. How it maddened him! Sometimes he thought it was the specter, this fantastically well-hung will-o'-the-wisp that had driven him to the very depths of sin. He had fought it at first, but one might as well fight a charge of gross indecency at a time when things were, you know, totally not at all cool. What could he do? It invaded every aspect of his life. He no longer went to the ballet. He gave fellatio. When other people ate cake, he got a gâteau job. But sin, smoking opium, stealing virginities, shitting in a young lady's purse, sin could subdue the stiffy, curtailing the nightly visits from the ghost of Christmas Shaft. But satisfying as it was, sin had its pitfalls. The portrait tucked away in his attic still sported a fabulous bulge, but the rest of it had become pretty much poor person ugly. Each new act of wickedness was a new wrinkle. Each dose of pox from a prostitute, Dorian Possmith thought. There it was again! Bumping blindly into his throat! Ugh! Knocking at the door of his esophagus like a Mormon in a flesh-colored swimming cap! Ugh. He groaned at first with his exasperation, and then with desire. To hell with another evening of coughing fits. He was going to enjoy this at home. He sped through the foggy streets, half running, half gagging. With each step, the apparition seemed to increase in girth and enthusiasm until it was all he could do to breathe. He fell into his front hall in a daze, and then railed back. I had never been this strong before. It was like childbirth, only backwards and up the wrong hole! I couldn't believe it, but gag reflexes never lie. The fellatio was coming from inside the house. He ran from room to room, searching for the ground zero of spit not swallow. But in his heart, he already knew. He took the stairs to the attic, two at a time, and threw open the door. Lord Henry smiled back at him, pants around his ankles, dig deep in the picture of Dorian Gray. Hello! He said. And a thin spray of his personal watercolor arced across the floor. Are you? Dorian paused and wetted his lips. Are you using my face as a glory hole? Lord Henry raised a perfect eyebrow. Of course! You are a fascinating young man. I wanted to experience you from the inside. Why else should I have been so eager to know you, if not for the sake of my cock? Everything you have ever done, Dorian, indeed, everything that has ever existed and everything that ever will exist has all been because of my cock. In a way, I suppose I created you. Ever since the day we met, your life has been nothing but a puppet show with my penis pulling the strings. Dorian gaped. There was the picture he knew all too well, slimy with upper-class spunk. There was Lord Henry holding it by the frame, and there was Lord Henry's penis poking perkily through the hole. It was appalling, simply appalling. But it was getting Dorian so hard. Come here, Dorian, Henry crooned. We both know you want it. I represent to you all the cocks you have ever had the courage to suck. As he fell to his knees behind the painting, Dorian knew it was true. He took Henry's elegant cucumber into his mouth, and a polter pickle entered with it. At that moment, he understood the terrible bond between his portrait and himself. When he sinned, it suffered, but when it sucked, he swallowed. But he understood something else too. It could never please Henry like he could. On the other side of the painting, Lord Henry bucked and moaned. "Don't worry," he gasped. "It isn't gross indecency if the balls don't touch." Dorian didn't reply. His mouth was full of ectoplasm and precum. He let out a muffled groan. Lord Henry frowned. "Stop," he cried. "Take off your clothes." Dorian pulled himself to his feet, already fumbling with his buttons. He threw off his necktie, his shirt, his Victoria's Secret girdle, until at last he stood proud and erect, an impossible Adonis with a perfect nest of pubes. Lord Henry looked him up and down critically. "Charming, quite charming," he exclaimed at last. "Now pose for me." Leaning the frame against the wall, he produced a paintbrush from the pocket of his coat. In one swift movement, he bent down and drew it across the slick of semen on the floorboards. "This time you are the painting," he said, daubing Dorian's chest with a fertile eggshell light. "Now show me your glory hole." He spun Dorian around and pinned him against the painting, slipping into him as smoothly as a flower in a buttonhole. His free hand reached for Dorian's column, guiding it through the hole in the canvas like a one-eyed whack-a-mole. As he began to thrust, Dorian's penis slipped in and out of his likeness's mouth, and he felt a phantom phallus inside him once more, but this time it was his own. It was perfection! Not just perfection, it was cockception! Now the painting began to spill over with an overload of sin, or at least sin as defined by a society with some serious hang-ups about butt stuff. Dorian saw the warts and wrinkles spread across its face and groaned in ecstasy. The more hideous it got, the harder he became. With each thrust, Henry was driving him further into depravity, but there was only one sin he wanted now, and it was already balls deep inside him. "Now you understand," Lord Henry whispered. We have all got our dicks in glory holes, Dorian, but some of us are looking at the stars." Dorian gasped as the final thrust pushed him over the edge. He spasmed, tasting his own spunk filling his mouth as he came. But then he let out an awful cry. The spell was broken. His body shriveled, twitching and decaying until he was nothing but a decrepit corpse on the floor. Lord Henry looked at the painting, perfect as the day it was painted. He looked at the wizened husk in front of him, a stream of semen spilling from its mouth. Then he looked down affectionately at his penis.
"Well, old friend," he said, "time for an encore."
And that was Lord Henry, as written by Sarah Stanton, longtime Shipwreck booster, first-time Shipwreck writer.
She, her bio, she wrote that she's attended 10 shipwrecks in a row, which I thought was adorable. Also, she's from Australia. She's actually a wallaby.
Like, she went to the Wallabies Academy?
The Wallaby Academy for erotica writing. So last up, this is my favorite character. Okay, Sybil Vane. In the book, is Dorian's first love interest, and he goes to a theater, and he falls in love with her on stage. She's, like, acting Shakespeare or something. And then she quits the theater to be with Dorian, but then he doesn't want her anymore, so she kills herself. So if anyone knows me in real life, which probably none of you do, but anyway, the real reason that I needed this character included is, first of all, because she's, like, the only woman in the whole fucking book. But also, Because, and this is true, in the 1945 version of the film, Sybil Vane is played by Angela Lansbury in her very first ever on-screen role. And Angela Lansbury is my personal patroness forever and ever, amen. I love her. So it was my secret hope that during the show, some very well-mannered person in the audience would get murdered, and I would have to close the door and keep everybody there until I solved the mystery. Alas, that did not happen. However, this piece is hilarious, and it is an actual scene-by-scene rewrite of the book.
"Have you heard the news, Basil?" said Lord Henry one evening, as Basil Hallward was shown into the aristocrat's opulent study. "Dorian Gray is engaged to be married." Hallward swooned and flung himself onto the nearest velour fainting couch. "Dorian engaged to be married," he cried. "To whom?" "To a stripper," said Lord Henry. Basil turned pale and pulled his smelling salts from his breast pocket. "This is all your fault, Harry," he cried. "Dorian was supposed to be my twink, but you've ruined it with your 10-page lecture on hedonism." "Dorian is blossoming into his own twink now, Basil," Lord Henry replied, sniffing a nearby carnation. "And I get a creepy paternal hard-on from watching him step into his own dick." "But think of Dorian's birth and position and wealth," Basil whined. "It would be absurd for him to marry so far beneath him." "The dullest of marriages are for all the right reasons," Lord Henry quipped. "I hope the girl is good, Harry. I don't want to see Dorian tied to some gold-digging skank." "Oh, she's better than good. She's beautiful," murmured Lord Henry, sipping a glass of vermouth and orange bitters. "Dorian says she has tits like fresh watermelons. And he is not often wrong about such things. After all, hanging out with us has taught him misogyny of a kind to rival the upskirt of subreddit." "But do you approve of the marriage, Harry?" "If Dorian Gray proposes to wed a beautiful girl who can put both legs behind her head, it is not my job to air my moral prejudices. My only concern is that he looks good doing it. But here is Dorian himself. He will tell you more than I can. My dear Harry, my dear Basil, you must both congratulate me," said the lad, throwing off his evening cape with its satin-lined wings and shaking each of his friends by the hand. "I have never been so happy. Of course, it is all so sudden, all real delightful things are. Yet it also seems that I've always dreamt of having a magnificent trophy wife to call my own." He was flushed with excitement and pleasure and looked simply irresistible to the two older men. "I hope you will always be very happy, Dorian," said Hallward.
"Come and have a seat on my lap," Lord Henry broke in. "And then you will tell us all about how it came about."
"There's really not much to tell," Dorian said as he snuggled up to Lord Henry on the sofa. "One evening, about 7 o'clock, I determined to go out in search of some adventure. I felt that this great monstrous London of ours, with its myriad of people, its sordid sinners and its splendid sins, as you once phrased it, must have something in store for me. In short, I wanted to get dirty. And about 8:30, I happened upon an absurd little theater with gaudy posters of naked women and a sign that read, 'All Nude Cabaret.' I simply couldn't resist going in. The innards of the theater were even more ostentatious than I imagined. A veritable rainbow of lights illuminated a black runway stage, surrounded by drunken ruffians. Serving girls roamed the floor, clad in neon bikinis and grotesque amounts of rouge. In the far corner, a lecherous DJ presided over an enormous phonograph. As I arrived, a completely nude woman was on stage, wiping down a shiny pole with a dirty rag. The whole place smelled of brass polish and lycra. I nearly walked out, but I remembered what you once told me, Harry. Stick your dick in every dirty hole you see before you become old and can't get it up. So I took a seat near the stage and ordered an appletini. Just then, the house lights dimmed and music began playing. I believe the tune was Flawless by Beyoncé. The DJ announced that Sybil Vane was to take the stage. The pearly gates of heaven must have been concealed behind those dingy curtains, for out walked an angel, clad in a white corset, a short ruffled skirt, white fishnet stockings, and a pair of enormous transparent platform heels. Across her collarbone was that tattoo that read, "Man-eater." The way she moved was hypnotic. Her body was petite, yet she commanded the entirety of the stage with her divine presence. The music wailed through the tiny phonograph, while Sybil Vane climbed, twirled, scrawled, and twerked her way into my heart as Beyoncé sang, "Bow down, bitches." She tore open her corset and let the girls loose. Her breasts were two perfect bouncing cherubs. Her nipples stared at me like the shining eyes of a tiger in the darkness. Captivating, yet deadly. I was drawn to the edge of the stage where I emptied my pockets of shilling after shilling all over her while Sybil gracefully gathered the spoils into her various orifices. After the performance was over, I returned to my seat, quite exhausted. To my delight, Sybil returned to the stage to clean up. We made eye contact, and she held my gaze as she ran the filthy rag up and down the length of the girthy brass pole. I stared back and could practically feel that rag rubbing my cock down with brass polish. When she finished, Sybil, completely naked, save her plastic heels, hopped off the stage and walked straight to my table. It was as if the Mona Lisa herself had stepped through the frame to greet me in the flesh. "Hey, Big Spender, want a lap dance?" she asked. Her eyes held a look that was either barely contained lust or abject contempt. "I'm gonna go with lust." Before I knew it, she had me by the hand and led me into the private booths. The wallpaper was dreadful. The floor smelled of vomit, and the door was guarded by a terrifying man. But I was in heaven all the same. In a dim corner, she sat me down across from a sign that read, "No sex in the champagne room," and stood before me. Then this wonderful music began. "My milkshake brings all the boys to the dance. I like it's better than yours." She began to gyrate with the rhythm as she leaned slowly, sensually towards me. Her tongue nearly touched my ear as she whispered, "Let me make you more comfortable." And she began to undo my necktie with her mouth. The aroma of cigarettes was on her breath, and I grew quite lightheaded. After removing my tie, she let it fall onto the growing bulge in my trousers. With bewilderment, I watched as she lowered her hips onto my lap and picked up the silk tie with her Kegel muscles. She ordered me to hold out my hand, then spun around, bent forward, and dropped the tie onto my palm. It was warm and moist. As I held the fabric to my face to smell her essence, she began to grind her back against my pants. La la, la la, la la. Warm my top. Her hips moved like the waves of the ocean, while her powerful buns crashed against the beachhead of my loins. La la, la la, la la. "Those boys are waiting." She turned back around and mounted me, her angelic tits smothering my face. I could feel the fire of her cunt against my Dorian Jr. And in a matter of seconds, my milkshake was all over my pants. I feel that I should not tell you all this, but I can't help it. Of course, our engagement is a dead secret. My guardians are sure to be furious, but I don't care. I'm young and rich and white, and I'll do whatever I want. Lord Henry sipped his cocktail in a meditative manner. "At what particular point did you mention the word marriage, Dorian? And what did she say in answer? Perhaps you forgot all about it." "My dear Harry, I didn't treat it as a business transaction, and I didn't make a formal proposal. After I creamed myself, I told her that I loved her, and she said, 'No touching.'" "But as I wrote her a check for the lap dance, her eyes held a look that was either unadulterated love or wretched pity." "I'm gonna go with true love."
We And that was Sybil Vane, as written by the incomparable Alan Leggett. Basically, Shipwreck has generated two juggernauts. Maybe three. There's a juggernaut in the making in Joe Wadlington, but there are two juggernauts in function. And one is Alan Leggett, the author of Sybil Vane.
So Alan won like five in a row, and back in the old days, back during classic Shipwreck. He started in December of 2013 and went all the way through May of 2014. So that's quite a stretch. He was our first ever multiple time winner, and obviously you can tell why.
That is our show, and thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned. Come out to the live show as often as possible. Frequent the Booksmith. They make this whole thing happen. That'll do it.
Shipwreck out. I have boobs in places you've never dreamed of. I, like, want that tattooed on my body.